On this episode of Trading Camp, we interview Money Mander. We talk about the stock market and economic developments that define 2023 and what we're paying attention to as we turn the calendar into 2024. Trading Camp has partnered with Elite Trader Funding, a proprietary trading firm focused on giving traders the opportunity to profit from the markets without risking their own capital. ETF offers a range of evaluations which tests your abilities as a trader. When you pass, you'll be able to choose from funded accounts ranging from $10,000 to $300,000. The only risk is a monthly flat fee. The ETF community provides an excellent learning environment and networking opportunities for those serious about taking their game to the next level.
We are excited to offer our listeners 30% off of any trading evaluation on ETF's site except for Fast Track.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name. When last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheel of dealing, limousine riding, jet flying.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to TCP episode 95, about to get underway, the first episode of the year 2024. The last time that we spoke with you guys was in December of 2023. A lot has happened since then. It's really been a pretty crazy 2 months. Excited to catch up with the guys. Noah, what's going on, brother?
Alejandro, what's going on? Happy New Year to everybody. It has been a pretty wild, I guess, last 2 months, particularly since we spoke last time. We were, you know, I guess, in that range in the S&P 500, and since then we've sort of exploded to the upside. And so definitely a lot to talk about as far as markets go, what we're looking at into 2024. And always great to get to chat with Money Mander.
Money Mander, what's going on? Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, guys. Pleasure to be back for the annual podcast. And 95 episodes is pretty crazy. Being one of the first guys on here, it's wild to see where this came.
So we have to talk about what we have to talk about, not because I necessarily want to, but I think it's a good way to preface some of the conversations we'll have later in the episode. Money Mander, last January, we did something very similar where you put out, you know, a nice little report for the public with some expectations or predictions, forecasts that you had going into the year 2023. Now, I will say, before we get into the details of the report and what your expectations were, the majority of the public had similar thoughts, which I think is really where things went wrong. But you weren't the only person thinking that, you know, 2023 would be a tough year for the markets, a tough year for the economy. We have seen a super resilient economy that nobody really saw coming. Obviously, the market had an incredible year. S&P up 23-24%, led by the Magnificent Seven. Insane stuff. What are your thoughts looking back on the year?
Yeah, I think it's a good laugh now to reflect on the NASDAQ coming off one of, if not the highest performing years ever, up over 50% in 2023. So looking back at the paper with the conservative S&P target of 2950 at the end of the year, it's a pretty good chuckle. Now, I think the big thing to hit on here is that Jerome Powell and the Fed seemingly so far have pulled off what had never been done before in a perfectly soft landing. And so we'll see where we get into by the end of the year as they start to do the cuts here, and we'll talk about that a little later in the episode. But as they start to cut rates here, we'll see how the economy manages. But so far, seeing one of the most resilient economies through a rate hiking cycle that we've ever seen. So it's a good laugh now. And I think the big thing to harp on here is that it's kind of like the man in the arena, where whenever you're going to put something public like that, it's easy to throw shade. But the big thing as traders versus investors is I really lost out on a big opportunity on the investment side of things where I didn't buy my favorite names at the big discounts. But that's okay. In an investing horizon, you know, I have the rest of my career. But as a trader, the biggest thing is I didn't really let that cloud my judgment in trading the day-to-day, which is where I think macro can really screw up a lot of traders. If you're just trading the day-to-day, the macro should be irrelevant. And so I think even going into the year with such a bearish bias, eventually you just have to call it kaput and realize your forecasts were wrong. and then you flip sides. And so it was probably March that I started flipping into long tech. And then there were still some short opportunities in financials and other sectors. But really, the mega rally we saw in tech that led the entire indices was some of the best trading we've ever seen. And so if anyone had really stuck to that bearish bias that you mentioned that the public really had, I was definitely in the majority there thinking we were going to see another flat to red year in the S&P last year. The people who stuck to their guns on that got slaughtered. So I think that's really the big thing to take away from it.
Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned the Fed, and we'll definitely get into that. Let's just start by talking about equities and what we saw within different sectors of the market and what really surprised people the most. Because there's kind of two parts to this. And you hear this a lot where the stock market isn't the economy. And I think that last year, at least the first half when the economy was looking doom and gloom, is a perfect example of this. So to start 2023, you know, we had obviously been rallying nicely off of the October lows, but investors and traders were still pretty uncertain about what was to come. And I think what we saw and what was a major driver was, of course, AI, which served as an insane tailwind for everybody's favorite stocks. We can start by talking about the Magnificent Seven. I believe the Magnificent Seven was up about 80% in 2023, with the not so magnificent 493 being up 7 or 8%, maybe around 10%, given the rally that we saw into the end of the year. But there was a huge discrepancy there where mega cap tech was just leading the charge relentlessly. So going back to the start of last year, I just want to hear both of your guys' thoughts on what were things looking like, and when did you guys you know, maybe get the sense that tech was really starting to pick up the pace?
I could, I'll go first on this one. I guess for me to, I'll hit the last part of your question. Like, when did I think that, or I guess like sort of abandon the, I guess, overall bearish bias on the market. And I guess just like you get to the point where you have to like almost hold your nose and buy is what I hear a lot of people say, particularly when things are ripping higher, right? Like it's, you know, as traders, you're taught, you know, you buy on pullbacks, you buy when the market goes down. Because in the long run, the market goes up, right? And that's for traders and investors, right? Long term, the market goes up. When you get a pullback, you want to buy, theoretically. And I think that the psychological scarring from like 2022 for me and for a lot of people was like, well, things in 2022 were just keep dipping. So when you got a dip in 2023 and it seemed like a good buying opportunity, it's almost like you had that PTSD from like 2022, or like, I don't know, like, you know, this stock is up 200% off the lows. It's a ridiculous rally so far. What can I do? I would say that for me, after that rally into the summer, I think that is what got me like, okay, this has some legs to it. And I think the thing about, you know, you mentioned the AI piece of it. I think that was obviously important. But for me, and we talked about this on a pod a while back when we had Matt on, was that the big thing that, you know, people were sort of focusing on was the fact that there's going to be these productivity gains, right? Is that these companies are going to be able to produce better products for cheaper. And that, you know, the primary drivers of that sort of whole revolution were going to be the NVIDIAs of the world, the AMDs of the world, the Microsofts of the world. And so, you know, once we got that really aggressive rip into the summer, I think that for me was like a, okay, recalibrate and sort of look for opportunities. And that's where, when we got that dip in September, I bought some things. I bought, obviously, just indexes. I bought the semiconductor ETF. I bought AMD. I bought, I think, Rivian towards the end of the year. So I started to dip my toes into some positions, because at that point, I felt that, you know, having had that rally off of the lows into the summer, you know, that to me was sort of like a clear sign that this thing, while it may, you know, still come down at some point in the future, it's not going to be anytime soon. And so I just waited for the pullback and sort of got back into my regular, I guess, my regular, like, you know, going through the motions of buying names that you like and, you know, not really caring about the day to day. I feel like, you know, in the early part of 2023, in the early part of last year, when you have like a strong conviction to one side or the other, you can get sort of to the point where it's like, you know, I think this is going to go down, and if it doesn't go down right now, you know, I'm wrong, and you're sort of like stressing out about every single move. I think that the best place to be in both trading and investing is sort of like when you can take not necessarily like a you don't care approach, like a laissez-faire approach, but an approach that it's not going to bother you if I buy AMD today and it's down tomorrow and it's down the next day and it's down the next day. It's not going to be a massive problem for you. Like, I felt that sort of feeling come back to me in the latter part of 2023, and it served me well through the beginning of the year here, obviously, as tech has just absolutely blown off the top into the end of last year. And some of the names are still going into this year. I actually sent Mander a chart of Microsoft last night at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I was like, what is going on here? This thing is just not coming back. So yeah,
AMD, that September AMD buy was really nice.
Yeah, AMD, it's up AMD, like
30% from there.
Yeah, AMD has, that was one of my favorites, primarily just because obviously of the entire, you know, sort of AI narrative. And even for me, as much as I love NVIDIA and as much as I'm kicking myself, like Mander talked about, you know, for not, you know, taking a flyer at the beginning of 2023. Literally the last time we were on this pod, AMD was at 150. It's sitting at 560 right now. So it's like, I wasn't able to really stomach putting a larger position on in NVIDIA with where it was trading at. Like, even during that pullback in September, I mean, what, NVIDIA got like a 15% drop from the highs. And like, obviously looking back at it, yeah, that's a great discount. But at the time, like, we were sort of just consolidating around all-time highs. I didn't really love the look of it. But AMD sort of had that look like it had a bit more to go. It hadn't yet taken out the all-time highs, which I believe that we're coming up on now. If not, yeah, we're coming up on that now. 164 all-time highs. Stock's trading at 160. That's sort of how I went about it in the end of the year. Was just, you know, pick names that you're comfortable owning for the longer term and take the trading day to day. And, you know, we can talk about the trading aspect of the end of the year, because that was crazy as well. But I'll let Mander go ahead.
Yeah, I think when they write the textbooks in the future, looking back on this rate hiking cycle, AI almost has to be equally to thank as the job that the Fed did, because you kind of had a twofold, a double-edged sword. I mean, going into the start of 2023 last year, because all the names that really were able to capitalize on the AI boom that we're speaking of here in terms of profitability and the semiconductors, obviously selling the chips, were also the names that were the most heavily discounted going into the year. And so I'm looking at NVIDIA right now. And so while it rallied well over 200% in 2023, that's coming off of a 65% down year in 2022. And so the same is really with Tesla, with Meta. Everyone remembers Jim Cramer crying at the Meta earnings. I mean, these names were so beaten up that that's really what led to this massive spring, is you had an over discounting going on where the economy really never folded. And these companies were supposed to be the ones that got hit the hardest in consumer spending and tech. And then at the same time, when you already would have had shorts covering because they were overly discounted, you now have the big sweep of AI really taking fold at the exact same time, which led to this major blowout. Obviously, the historic year we saw in QQQ, which is kind of the same story. It was up 50% last year, but namely coming off of a 37, 38% down year in 2022. So I think that's really the big thing to look at there. And obviously, like you said, the Magnificent Seven is what led most of the rally. If you look at IWM, the holistic markets really traded flat the entire year. IWM may have closed plus or minus 5% last year when you had QQQ and the NASDAQ with those Magnificent Seven so heavily weighted in the market cap, up over 50% on the year. And so I think coming into this year, if we want to turn the corner, and what I'm kind of looking at is more expansion and rotation out of tech into those names. Because I think if we do start to see this soft landing progress, as is going on so far, once these cuts come, assuming nothing instrumental breaks, which I think already would have happened, even going back to like when rates were at 5%, if we were going to see a financial collapse or anything based off of rates, it probably would have happened then. And so I think going into now, if the Fed is tactile in the way they cut rates, I think you're going to see more expansion into those names that have really been trading like crap because of where rates are at. And so if you look at like a discounted cash flow model, those names with a bunch of debt on their balance sheets, if you look at the Affirms and the growth companies and the high betas, those ones really haven't sprung. And IWM is really still trading around the open of last year, has not seen any of this rally unfold. And so I think in a twofold thing between profit taking coming out of these tech names that are trading at 30 PE multiples, I don't think QQQ probably sees a down year just historically coming off the year it saw, but I think you're going to see way more expansion into those growth themes, which I think is the best market to be in. When you see kind of going back to like a 2021 feel, when you have those high betas flying, you start to see the IPO and the M&A market start to emerge again as rates lower. I think that's really what we probably see this year versus continued expansion into the tech that really led the charge last year.
I was going to mention that honestly earlier.
So we're definitely going to talk more about the year to come. I want to save that for a little bit later because I still want to talk about the Fed in 2023 and what we saw there. But before we do that, Noah mentioned something that was really important, a keyword, productivity, which is what I think caught a lot of people off guard. And what was so interesting, and as you mentioned, you know, when we saw all of these names that were backed by this AI narrative, a lot of it was because of that. Okay, these companies, SaaS companies, tech companies with really nice margins who are now going to be able to benefit the most from this increase in productivity, from this AI movement. Some of these co-pilot tools that are coming out are just insane. And that's the type of stuff that caught people off guard. Because as Manner was alluding to and talking about cash flows, you can't find those intangibles in a balance sheet or in a statement of cash flow. And so that is why I think so many people, and it was kind of this perfect storm of how much of a factor is this AI, and people are now calling it, you know, a bubble. How much of a driver can this be? And obviously, you know, we saw names really start to pick up. And, you know, as of right now, there's still no end in sight. And we'll definitely talk about what we're expecting in 2024. But before we do that, I want to just open the discussion to talk about what the Fed was sort of hinting at to start the year in 2023, how you guys felt about the economy. Very, very interesting just to kind of look back and recognize the fact that almost everybody was wrong. You know, Mander, you mentioned the Fed is pretty close or appears to be nearing this incredible engineering of a soft landing that nobody thought to be possible. We're not quite there yet. We'll talk about that when we talk about 2024. But what changed and what did you guys see going on beneath the surface that nobody saw coming to start the year in 2023 when everybody was nearly certain that we were going to be headed into recession?
I think the big thing to take away from that is that nobody saw the soft landing coming. The only people that really projected what was going to happen last year correctly was the Fed. And so I think the biggest thing to look at is the way markets are pricing in where rates are going to be versus where the Fed has projected. So going back to last year, pretty much every high we saw and every pullback was the markets getting a little frothy on where the Fed was going to peak rates at, and then pulling back when they got over frothy, expecting a lower federal funds rate than we got. And so I think going into this year, that's going to be the big thing to look at. And so we're starting to see a little bit of a pullback at the start of the year here in 2024, whether it be profit taking delayed off of last year for tax purposes, or whether it be that the federal funds rate is getting too many cuts priced in here is yet to be seen. So whether this becomes a meaningful correction or continues up into all-time highs is going to be the thing to watch. That's really where I'm looking at it. I think we get a meaningful correction here solely because right now, and I know this is the buzzword everyone's talking about, going into December, the federal funds futures are currently pricing in 6 rate cuts into the end of this year, putting us at a likelihood of ending between 3.75 and 4%, which I think would be really aggressive. The Fed just put out their December projections at the meeting for 2024, which had median projections of 4.6. And so that's nearly 100 basis points or a full percentage point off of where the Fed projects themselves, basically 4 cuts. And so they're saying anywhere between 2 and 3 cuts going into the end of the year, probably starting in around June. And so I think that's going to be the big thing to watch. If they're saying that to be a little bit more hawkish and keep things tame before starting a cutting regime, and maybe the markets know more than the Fed is leading out, and we do get 6, I think that's going to be incredibly bullish, namely for those growth and high beta names we were discussing. But on the other hand, if the Fed sticks to their policy, which really they do for the most part, what Jerome Powell and what the Fed has projected is pretty much what they do. And Noah loves to say that as well. If we do only get 2 to 3 cuts here, I think markets are getting a little bit over-eager here going into the start of the year. And so that's going to be the main thing I'm watching is every 3 months when we get these projections, how is that differing with a spread between what the federal funds futures are pricing in?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to the Fed from last year, I will say I think anybody who was talking about what the Fed was or wasn't going to do kind of, or at least anybody who was being smart about it was prefacing any comments with, you know, dependent on the data, right? The Fed constantly says that they're data dependent. They're watching PCE, they're watching core CPI. And as long as those things, you know, continue to come down towards their targets, you know, they're going to, like Sal said, sort of look to keep rates where they are throughout the year and then slowly taper them back throughout the year. In 2024, there were several times last year that the market sort of got ahead of itself, pricing in cuts earlier than, you know, the Fed had suggested that they would come in. And, you know, whenever we got something like that, we would see sort of a mundane pullback and then, you know, a rip right back to where we were. And so I think the game plan going into 2024 kind of has to be the same, right? We really haven't seen, you know, much of an uptick in CPI. The overall trend is down. If you look at a chart on a month over month basis, it's pretty obvious that the overall trend is down as far as inflation goes. And I think that while the market was pricing in, you know, like Sal said, six cuts this year versus the, what was it, three, I guess, that the Fed had sort of planned. I think that, you know, We'll probably get something similar where, like, as we get closer to the actual event date, the markets will become a little bit more rational. I mean, even looking right now in just the past 5 days, the probability, the market's pricing in of a cut as early as March was at 81% 5 days ago, sitting at 53 today, right? And this is a metric that we saw up at 90, you know, towards the end of the rally, towards the rally into the end of December last year. And so I think that you're going to see that sort of continue, the market get ahead of itself and then, you know, slowly pull itself back in. What that looks like in stocks, you know, who knows, obviously. It tends to just be a pullback like we've had, you know, really since the start of the year so far. But I think that if you're going to look for anything more than that, I think that you have to see people really get caught off sides in regards to where they think the Fed is going with rates and you know what they're expressly trying to do here. I mean, they've made it pretty obvious that we've reached the peak in this cycle. They've made it pretty obvious they're looking to cut rates throughout this year. I don't know when the consensus for the Fed is that they'll do their first cuts or no?
From the Fed, they haven't really released, and it really varies by member. I believe it was Hawker said sometime in the summer, but it really depends by member. I'll tell you, the markets are pricing in first cut coming majority likelihood in March, coming up just in the next meeting after this month. So that's really where we probably see some turmoil, is depending on if we get that come March or they do push it out into June.
I'm definitely on a similar page as you guys. One thing that's, I think, a little bit concerning and that, you know, is important to acknowledge, the rally that we saw into the end of the year that we were previously talking about, it was almost as if the Fed cut and started to cut. And so we saw this, you know, obviously economic conditions start to ease, financial conditions start to ease into the end of the year. And so the market, the way it's currently positioned and, you know, talking about what traders are expecting, you guys mentioned 56% chance in March. There's like a 90%+ chance of them cutting by summer. If that doesn't end up being the case, I think that that's where things can start to go wrong. And the pace at which inflation has been coming down, I think, is important to note as well. And then the past CPI and PPI reports were a bit stickier than, you know, what we've seen, you know, the pace of inflation coming down throughout the majority of 2023. And so now, as we start this new year, coming off of a massive rally, we talked about the discrepancy between tech and you know the remainder of the market. It's like, is it realistic for us to see, in talking in terms of what the S&P will do, is it realistic for us to see something similar to what we saw last year? Probably not. Obviously, the S&P was up 24%. That's an outlier in itself. But even to see half of that, especially going into a volatile year because we do have a presidential election coming up. There's just so many outside factors, I feel like, that the market has gotten super giddy, super ahead of itself. And so this isn't me saying that I think, you know, it's going to be a bad year in the S&P. I just think it's probably going to be a time for traders and investors to start to get really strategic again, because of the fact that the Magnificent Seven ripped face. If inflation is just even a bit sticky and the Fed can hold off, imagine what happens if the Fed doesn't cut by summer. As you guys mentioned, the Fed is data dependent. If inflation is starting to look sticky over the next couple months, and we'll obviously be watching that, and then the Fed starts to say, hey, we can, and not to mention the labor data we've been getting as well, which has been pretty strong, and wage growth. If the Fed decides, hey, we can just keep rates higher for longer, I think that some of the tech names that did really, really well last year are likely, you know, going to do not so well. And Sal, you alluded to it earlier and would love to talk about it more. I think that there's a lot of opportunity in some growth names and some names that didn't do as well as the tech leaders last year. I think there's a lot of value to be found in the market. But again, I think it's one of those times to start to get strategic again. And last year's euphoria, especially into the end of the year, it's going to be super tough for the market to follow that up because of how much good and how right now what the market is pricing in is literally perfection by the Fed. Not even better than perfection, because the market wants 6 rate cuts when, as you mentioned, the Fed is saying, okay, max 3.
Yeah, I think if we look back, just take last year as a prime example and a learning opportunity for those who didn't. I think right now it's clearly not a market to be necessarily short. But at the same time, I think given everything we're speaking of, your risk definitely lies to the downside. I don't think we're in a position where we could get upside surprises. Exactly like you were just saying, the market is currently pricing in more than perfection. 6 rate cuts is likely not going to happen when the Fed loves to stick to the script, especially when we're still seeing data that is not showing any economic collapses to force their hand. I think the only reason we likely get 6 cuts right now is if something starts to break. And other than that, you know, the economy's shown resilient at current rates. And so what incentive does the Fed have, or what reason would they be forced into cutting rates like in the terms of 6 cuts this year? They have none. I think if you get into summer, and likely if they stick to their script, we probably do get 2, 3, maybe 4 cuts this year. But even then, that still puts your risk to the downside just based off where the markets are currently pricing things. And so I think if the Fed does stick to the script, that's not necessarily a black swan event or a full change of narrative that likely sends us into a full-on downside market or back into a bearish state. But at the same time, I think it probably brings us back into a more conventional market where you trade relatively flat to slightly up on a holistic level, and you just start to see sector by sector rotation where money comes out of financials, maybe into energy, and then energy will rotate into this sector. And you see in and out of tech into growth and high betas, and you kind of see that spread between IWM and QQQ. I think that's more realistically what we get this year. But at the same time, just given that we're probably going to get cuts, if not guaranteed, at least some type of rate cuts to ease up where currently debt is trading at, I think just given off a risk to reward perspective, those names are still trading, a lot of them well over 50% off high, some of them even still 70, 80%. And so if I'm looking to open up any new longs right now, and I think this is probably how a lot of people are looking at it, if you missed out on a lot of last year's rally and you didn't grab your favorite names at their lows and X, Y, and Z, you know, a lot of people still would rather be short, and a lot of funds and institutions are only allowed to trade long. Sorry, I didn't mean short. A lot of people are only allowed to trade long. And so where are you looking to open longs? It's likely not NVIDIA trading at 560 for most people. It's likely not a lot of these names at all-time highs. And so I think a lot of rotation probably goes into those ones with, you know, much more upside if they trade back to those highs. So that's really where I'm looking at going into this year.
This episode is brought to you by Elite Trader Funding. ETF is a prop trading firm. For those of you who are unaware of what a prop trading firm is, they basically provide you with capital to trade with, and your only risk is the monthly subscription fee. How it works is once you pass an evaluation account, you then become eligible for real money payouts. Now, there are a lot of prop firms out there, but ETF's customer support, the products, and the styles of evaluations they offer are unmatched. I traded and passed a 150K evaluation account, and they were always willing to answer any questions I had along the way. I wish that I had been introduced to them when I first started trading. Thinking back to all the money I lost when I was new to the game, getting the chance to trade a large account while only risking a monthly subscription fee makes too much sense. Not to mention, if you're trying to trade a small-sized account, you can develop some pretty bad habits. Trading a funded account lets you really put your skills to the test by trading more realistic size. Head to the link in the show notes to start your journey as a funded trader today. Something that not a lot of people are talking about, well, maybe a lot of people are, but we haven't talked about on this episode, is some of the geopolitical risk as well. We're going into a very wild year, I feel like. And it's been a wild few years, but, you know, Ukraine and Russia is still going on. Then we have geopolitical tensions, obviously, in the Middle East. We have the Red Sea issue popping up as well with the Houthi rebels. There is so much going on in the world, and it's really interesting to think about how resilient the U.S. economy has been, as we've been talking about, and how good things look and feel. But I do want to talk about this concept of the K-shaped recovery that Aisha and Markets and Mayhem love to talk about. I've been looking into this phenomenon a bit more because I find it to be really interesting. So, talked about the labor market, you know, real wages are finally outpacing inflation. Things are just looking really strong, which is why, you know, the market is assuming that the Fed is going to be able to engineer this soft landing. You know, the consumer is looking way better than people expected it to. But this concept of the K-shaped recovery, where the top 20% of people, the top 20% of consumers are really doing the heavy lifting, and then the bottom 50% of consumers are the ones that are struggling, things aren't as pretty as they appear at the surface. And something to take into account, and I would love to hear your guys' take on it, is that we're going to start to see some of the lagging effects from stimulus waning off, people's excess savings from COVID running out, etc. When does that come into play? Because credit card debt is over $1 trillion and continuing to climb. The saving rate in the U.S. is continuing to come down. We know that last year was a very, very difficult time for, you know, the bottom 50%. And so when does that start to become a factor? Like, when do businesses feel that? Have businesses already felt that? What's the deal there?
Well, I think I think that all of those are like great questions to ask and, you know, obviously relevant. But I think that if you take that and try and create it into like a bearish argument, I'm not even saying that you are, but I'm saying that here's how I feel like people are looking at the market is, yes, all of those things exist. And yes, all of those things may be problems down the road right now. But at the moment, the names that have been carrying the stock market for the last 3, 4, 5 years all are seeing increased earnings, you know, throughout the next several years, like, or at least that's what they're expecting. And so when you have a situation like that where, you know, NVIDIA, it's funny. I saw a tweet today that I think NVIDIA has the same like forward PE that it had like a year ago. Think about that. Like, the stock is up 200%. It was 150 last year. It's $500 right now. The forward earnings is the same because that's what they're expecting their increase in earnings to be throughout the next X amount of quarters, months, years, right? So like, when you have a situation where on the surface, you have a lot of, you know, potential problems. You mentioned all the geopolitical risks, obviously an election year. It is something that I think people like to sort of speculate about. But I think at the end of the day, as long as you have this narrative that the names that the stock market has been carried by are doing fine and are going to continue to do fine. I don't think that you can expect the market to go anywhere but up. Like, I feel like that's the argument that people make, you know, when you approach them with, you know, what about the Middle East? What about inflation? Like, when you really look at the data, I mean, I feel like if those are concerns of yours going forward, if you're somebody who wants to invest in the market, but you're concerned that, you know, people are going to run out of their COVID savings or inflation is going to come back or whatever it is, just pay attention to the data. Like, as Alejandro said, the last few CPI prints have been like stickier than expected, but still more or less low. I mean, if you start to see like a series of prints, a series of higher lows, you start to see a series of reports where delinquencies are increasing. If you start to see those things, and I can understand being concerned about where the market is, but I feel like until that happens, you know, it's kind of just all like, what's the point of worrying yourself with it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I bring this stuff up more as like a thought experiment. I mean, it's fun, as you mentioned, to speculate and to kind of look at what's going on in the world. And I think that's just what we're trying to do. But as far as being invested in the market, you know, if you try to get too cute, you can definitely find yourself in trouble. But I guess the question I was more asking, outside of what the market's going to do, is there a possibility that the Fed's already late? And we can talk about like what Jerome Powell's, you know, like main incentives are at this point and what he's maybe focused on, because the Fed obviously doesn't want to cut too early, even though things have been looking really good. And, you know, the market certainly believes that they have you know, a bunch of reasons where they would be able to cut. And so what is it now that the Fed is waiting for? Why do you guys think that they are being as strategic as they're being? Do you think that they believe that there is a chance that they're wrong about inflation and that this deflationary pace doesn't keep up and that they can find themselves in trouble again? How much of the calculus do you think is, okay, we want to be heroes and we want to do this as perfectly as we can? Because obviously if they engineer this soft landing and things go exactly as expected, I mean, my goodness. So what do you think that the Fed's main mentality is right now and what Fed Jerome Powell's main mentality is currently?
I think it really harps back to what they've been saying for the past 2 years, and that being that history has really warned against premature cutting and premature pivoting against rate hiking cycles. And namely back in the 80s, they really had an almost identical scenario, except that once they got in this deflationary situation, kind of where we're at right now, where the hyperinflation has really cooled off, but they had not yet really brought it down to target and stabilized at target, they got a little ahead of themselves and began to ease off the gas. And that's exactly what rehiked the hyperinflation yet again. And I think that is really the Fed's biggest worry here, and really why I'm not thinking we get six cuts this year, namely because of everything you just said. They're data dependent, and none of the data shows yet that we're seeing any weakness form. And so really, if they were to ease off the gas too early here, all that's going to do is skyrocket inflation yet again and really send the markets. But when the markets send, that is also going to send another bout of inflationary worries. And so really, if you look at it, I mean, jobless claims have been on the steady downtick, with unemployment really hovering pretty much at all-time lows, has not upticked. You have the jobs available per person coming down while non-farm payrolls continues to beat to the upside. And so what all of that is saying to me is that even if those COVID savings and everything we talked about kind of as that downside risk, with credit card debt being at all-time highs and the national deficit and everything we're kind of sitting at, COVID savings starting to wear off, those people that have to go back to work are going back to work. And so even with the massive labor shortage we saw in the post-pandemic environment, because everyone was working from home, or people had made so much money in the stock market and X, Y, and Z, they had a bunch of savings saved up that they didn't want to go back to work. We're starting to see those people go back to work and start to stabilize, really, in that those massive labor opportunities and shortages are starting to come back down, but it's not leading into any unforeseen problems in the economy. And so I think until that changes, the Fed really is kind of in the position we're stating that the risk is to the downside and that they come off the trigger too easy here and just go back to square one. I mean, they could undo all the progress they've made very quickly with early cuts. And so that's kind of where I'm looking at things. I don't think it's like Noah said, I don't think all the speculation necessarily leads to a bearish case. But I think, as you mentioned, Alejandro, there are a lot of factors here kind of teeter-tottering on the seesaw right now that could send something into kind of like a snowball effect here. And I think that's really what the Fed is monitoring.
And Sal, I want to go back to something you said earlier, because I was just thinking about it when you talked about, you know, if the Fed were to cut 5 or 6 times, that would be extremely bullish for the market. My understanding is that the only way, a reason that something like that would happen is if something goes wrong and we dip into a recession. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way we've seen it historically, the way the Fed has projected it with 2 or 3 cuts would be sensical to me. It would make perfect sense for them to easily slow off of the elevated levels we're at. But what we've seen historically, when you start to see 100 basis points or more in like a mass cutting cycle, it's for a reason. And that's what we saw in 08. That's what we saw in 2000. The Fed is basically in a scramble to get back to ZERP. And that's clearly an induce of a recession. So I think that's, you know, what the markets are pricing in right now doesn't really make sense to me, because over 100 basis points of cuts this year when nothing's at fault does not make any sense to me unless we should spin into an economic downturn here. And so unless that's what the markets are projecting in terms of Fed funds futures, but it's clearly not what the markets are projecting trading at all-time highs, I'm just seeing a massive discrepancy there, because that's what we've seen previously, but it led to those massive collapses in 08, in 2000, in the 80s when you saw the massive cuts. So that doesn't really make any sense to me.
All right. I think we pretty much covered all the bases there as far as the Fed's concerned, unless you have something else you want to add, Noah.
No, not really. The only other thing I wanted to touch on was the fact that, I mean, increasing geopolitical tensions, namely in the Middle East, obviously you mentioned with the Houthis in Yemen, any increase in like geopolitical tensions would sort of give the Fed, I guess, additional reason to not want to have rates so high. Making financial conditions tighter, you know, in that scenario obviously would not be great. So I think that that's something else, I guess, on the back burner that you may want to watch out for, you know, for reasons that the Fed would look to maybe be a little bit more aggressive than they stated so far as cutting rates.
Yeah, and that'll definitely be something to monitor closely. A lot of crazy stuff going on in the Middle East and in the Red Sea. So we'll be watching that. Let's get to the fun part now. Let's talk about individual stocks or maybe sectors that you guys are watching going into the new year. I mentioned that I do think it's a year where investors are going to be paid for being a bit more strategic. And that doesn't mean, you know, going long and short and trying to be a hero, but maybe finding some sectors that were beaten down because, you know, I can't imagine a world where the Magnificent Seven are up 80% again. Famous last words, they'll be up 100% this year. But what are you guys looking at? Are there any particular names that you're interested in or sectors, ideas that have caught your attention to start the year? And before you guys go, I think that something that is really important to look out for, and what was a massive indicator last year, was price action in January. What's looking good in January and what's not? Was that not like the biggest tell of all time? Like tech started 2023 so well. And I was like, hey, isn't this normally how it works when we have a really good year in the market? And that is exactly how it turned out. But I'll open the floor. What are you guys looking at?
Manor, I just want to get, it's more of a question. I want to get your thoughts on the IWM trade. I feel like that's the most talked about like trade going into 2024, is almost like the spread QQQ, IWM, and not even QQQ in particular, but like MAG 7 IWM spread trade. Like people are really expecting like a catch up in the small caps and think that that's where a lot of opportunity lies. Particularly as it's particularly like relative to the Mag 7, which, like you said, so many of them up 100% plus last year. What do you think about that? I want to let you go. I kind of want to get your thoughts on it first, and then I'll jump in.
you're spot on in the amount of chatter about it. And I think the saturation of people talking about this trade is what has me a little hesitant that it's so flawless. But sticking to my guns, that's really where I'm looking, is to see rotation and profit taking out of the leaders of last year. Because really, I think on top of every other reason we gave why the Magnificent Seven did so well last year, at the same time, they're viewed as kind of that safe haven stock. And I think people putting money into index funds because of their market weighting, and people putting money solely into those names just because of, you know, their market cap and how big they are and seen as being safe names to hold for the long run, I think that's what really boosted it, because things were a lot more uncertain last year. And so I don't think people were taking those stabs into the bottom barrel of the market quite yet, but people still wanted to be invested and try and buy that bottom. So they were buying index funds, they were buying the Magnificent Seven, on top of every other reason that they had. You know, business did extremely well for them as well. But I think coming into this year, we start to see some of those more stabs going broader out into the market, into the Russell 2000. And I think, namely, going into my hot take for where I'm looking for this year is China stocks. Because I've heard one too many times everyone saying China is totally uninvestable right now. I think your risk to reward, longing some China names down here and longing some of these high betas, is really where the opportunity may present itself. And I think it's going to be selective, because this is different than 2021 in that 2021 was a full risk on, in that people were buying companies they didn't even know what they did for business just to buy it because they were a few dollars and wanted to see it squeeze. I don't think it's that kind of market again. I think those names that suck are going to continue to suck, but the ones that actually do business and are on the verge of being profitable probably see a decent uptake. So, you know, the ones you've heard of that are actually companies doing business, like a firm like Chewy, Shopify, Square, that whole basket of high betas that are still beaten up is really where I'm watching. And I think some of the regionals, as you start to see the rate cuts start to ease up their balance sheets with those unrealized losses, I think the KRE and the regional banks probably see a big uptick, which helps boost IWM there. So that's where I'm watching going into this year.
Listen, if you buy China names, I commend you, because it looks really ugly right now. China is an absolute nightmare. And I will say the only reason to buy China stocks is because nobody wants to buy China stocks. So as a counter trade, contra idea, I love it. I mean, risk reward, I was looking at Baba a couple of days ago. I mean, I don't know. I'm not buying it, to be honest, and I considered, but I understand where you're coming from. And I think that there is going to be a lot of opportunity there, especially if we start to see some unexpected stimulus in China, which is what I think we should be watching for. If we do get some crazy, or if China decides to deploy some crazy stimulus, then I think that those names are really going to go. So if you start to average in understanding the risks, then yeah, that could, it could definitely be a good idea. No, what are you watching?
I don't like the China stock narrative for this year personally. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like with where the market is at right now, like if they haven't gone yet, I just don't know what could do it. Like I feel like I would need to see some signs that they're alive first before I dip my toes in. Because I mean, if you look at like, even, it's one thing to like look at, you know, like a daily chart and be like, oh, like, you know, 52 week lows on Baba. But like, you go out onto like a weekly, monthly chart, like why are we trading at 2016 levels, 2015 levels? Like, why are we doing that? Like that to me is like kind of concerning.
Yeah. I mean, the entire nation is depressed. It's insane. I mean, everything is just getting beaten down. And that's why I think like there's definitely better opportunities elsewhere.
Hang Seng Index is at lows, dude, from like decade lows.
Every day it makes a new low.
Like I just don't think that's like super attractive to me. Right now, like,
doesn't it sound appetizing? It's at decade lows.
No, listen, yeah, to what look, we're saying though. Doesn't this sound like
I know.
Automatic.
I get it.
This is like when Dwayne bought Meta. Baba looks like
okay,
Meta's
but
chart.
Then Meta made implemented literally months after Hondo bought them. Meta implemented changes to like actually, you know, make the company better. Like, you know what
I'm saying?
Like,
watch to see if they start to inject some money some serious money into the economy in China, if they come out with some crazy stimulus, these names are going to go. Yeah, that's what everybody's waiting for. But I mean, but this is like, you have to be super careful trying to get ahead of this because, you know, you could lose down 20% in 3 weeks the way these things are moving, like literally.
I think the cool thing about it, the cool thing about the China trade is like, if you're really expecting a move there, like you really don't have to be super early. Like I that's kind of my point. It's like, if you're going to look for that long trade, like why not wait to see like a little bit of life first? Like, I don't know. That's just me. Going into the year though, I'm still looking at AI names to be completely honest. And I'm primarily interested obviously in AMD and how they treat this all time high breakout. Over 160. I mean, you look at the thing about AMD is that it is more expensive than NVIDIA in terms of like a valuation perspective. And so even though like you'll look at it, and I made the case, you know, earlier for why I bought it back in September, where it's like, you know, this relatively hasn't taken all-time highs yet. It hasn't really had that same sort of move. We've gotten that move in AMD. And so for me, you know, I'm not necessarily looking to add to the position up here, like particularly over highs. I think, you know, if we do get an NVIDIA type move, I mean, you're looking at $200 on AMD, which I think from a trader's perspective, like if you want, you know, a momentum trade, I just don't see, you know, really anything better in the market right now in terms of momentum. The other thing that I want to watch this year, obviously the IWM trade that I talked about with Mander. The reason that I wanted to get Mander's thoughts on that one is because we had a similar idea back in, I think it was like near the top, near the highs.
It was the high of that summer rally, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. It was like short Qs, long IWM, and it worked for a little bit, and then it didn't work. I don't like that everybody's talking about it. That for me is like kind of concerning. That's number one. And then number two,
I like long IWM. Just take the whole QQQ short out of the equation. Too much for me.
Just long IWM. Hey, I don't hate it. I mean, look, you look at IWM. I mean, it's been in a range, you know, especially like on a weekly chart. It's been in a range for the better part of, you know, 2 years now, like a year and a half, more or less. And so, I mean, trade the range is kind of how I'm looking at it right now. Like people, I think that IWM can work throughout the year, but I don't think that like now is the time for me, I guess, necessarily. Like, I'm not going to be longing IWM. You know, I think I would want it like closer to 180, like literally trading the range. We've been stuck between 160 and 200 for a year and a half. And then obviously look for that breakout over the 200 level eventually when it comes. I think that'll be a great trade. Or even a false breakout up there, I think would also be a great trade. It kind of looks like a false breakout on the weekly chart right now, because we did actually like come out of that $200 range, ultimately winded up closing back inside. And, you know, to start the year, it's been nothing but weakness for IWM. So I think that'll be interesting. The other thing that I'm paying attention to in regards to not necessarily like investing for the year, but like for trading, one thing I'm paying close attention to is the dollar. The dollar has had a really strong start to the year off of that like 101 level. And we're seeing it push up higher and higher. I think that right now where it's at, like the 103, you know, and a half level, I think that this is kind of like a really key spot on the chart. And I think that if we do wind up pushing higher, that's going to continue to put pressure on equities in the first quarter here. And so that's one of the things that we were watching as the calendar turned. And then obviously we got the breakout. Or the rally off the lows, not the breakout, the rally off the lows in DXY, and that's definitely put a bit of pressure on stocks to start the year. I'm going to continue to pay attention to that because I think that if we can continue to see DXY hold up, you know, on a day-to-day trading basis, I'm going to be looking to play the downside, which has been there for the first time really since, you know, that September pullback. We've gotten that over the past couple of weeks, you know, opportunities to both sides as the indices trade in this range. But, you know, as DXY continues to show strength, I think that you have to, for people who trade the indices on a daily basis, I think that for me is like one of the primary things that I'm watching to sort of keep me in tune with what side of the market I want to be on. And then last thing, obviously, we talk about it every year, but yields got a rally off of the 4% low and are pushing higher right now. I think that that's something else that you want to watch. Again, you know, strength in yields is going to put equities, it's going to put pressure on them on the rally that we've seen since the start of December, rather. So for me, those are two things that I'm watching every day to sort of help me with bias on the indices from a trading standpoint and, you know, what side of the market that I want to participate on.
Yeah, no, I think going hand in hand with your yield statement there, going into the start of the year, that kind of goes hand in hand with what we were talking about from the Fed, right? With the markets getting a little bit too frothy, if we start to see the Fed not give the 6 rate cuts that the markets are expecting here, you're going to see an uptick in yields along with the dollar going into the start of this year here. So I think that's a big thing to always watch, traders and investors alike, is that if the markets got a little bit too dovish pricing in cuts, and that's why we saw the pullback below 4% in the 10-year there, if we start to see that uptick going back towards a pricing in of around 3 that the Fed's been stating, you're going to see the 10-year yield start to push more significantly above 4%. And I think along with the strength in the dollar there, that's definitely going to pressure equities moving forward here into earnings season.
All right. So to wrap things up here, I'll give a couple of names that I've been looking at, and they're a lot more fun than what you guys said. Outside of China, that's a fun one. But I've been looking at two stocks in particular that I think have a chance to do really well. The first is Kava. So I didn't even know that Kava IPO'd in June. I think it was June of last year. They raised like over $300 million to open up new stores, and solid revenue growth there. But forget that. I mean, have you guys been to Kava? Kava's insane. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's hilarious you brought this up, because I had it on my notes here for the podcast. I love Kava and I love where it's trading at, and I think it goes perfectly with everything we've been saying the whole podcast for this year.
Yeah. So that's a name I've been looking at. And again, like I think that this is kind of going to be the story this year. Like you're going to have to go out and find names that, you know, are unique. And, you know, if Kava is half as successful as Chipotle, you know, it's going to be a good name to own for the long term. And then the other name is very similar sentiment, On Holdings, which is On Running. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the shoe, but they're starting to get super popular. The company's doing well as well. Solid cash flows, solid revenue growth. But again, I'm seeing this theme, and I know that Hoka trades under, you guys are going to have to remind me if you know, but it trades under like a basket. The holding company is Hoka, UGG, and I think some other footwear brands. But that stock has just absolutely gone nuts. And I was taking a look at OnCloud. I did decide to buy some. About 6 or 7 years ago, I want to say, my family started buying Hoka shoes, and I got really into wearing Hokas. And you know, I just saw the brand completely blow up, and I'm starting to see the same sort of trend start to happen with OnCloud. A lot of people are wearing these shoes, and the company seems to be doing really well from what I've looked at. And I think that that's another good name to own long term and to start to average into. So those are my two names that I'm hoping do well this year. But yeah, outside of that, I think we've pretty much touched on everything.
My last one would be, I guess, just like any cybersecurity basket. Like when you look at companies like CrowdStrike, that space in general, I think just like from a like macro trends perspective, I don't think that you can go wrong if not picking like an individual name. I personally like CrowdStrike, but like not if you don't want to pick an individual name, there's plenty of baskets out there that you could go buy and just to be have a little skin in the game as far as that trend goes. Because I mean, as the digitalization of the world, you know, continues to press forward, and it seems like it's going to press forward exponentially with the creation of the implementation of AI, I think that, you know, those companies, Trade Desk, Atlassian, and some of those other ones are definitely worth the watch.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to look something up really quick. Oh, found it. Okay. Talking about cybersecurity. So obviously there's like the geopolitical risks, war risks, and it's definitely been becoming a bigger theme. I read this today that JP Morgan, they put out some data that JP Morgan suffers 45 billion cyber attacks a day. $45 billion. Like, I'm not a software engineer, and I'm not too good with computers and software, and don't exactly understand the logistics of what that means, and I can't really wrap my head around it. But the number 45 billion hack attempts a day, that seems unfathomable. So to your point, Noah, you can't go wrong in that area.
What do you guys think about Bitcoin for the year?
Oh, we didn't talk about Bitcoin. All right, this is the last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll wrap up. So the spot ETFs were sell the news, I guess. I think Bitcoin's going to do well. I'm really of the thinking that, you know, if things start or continue to go well, that, you know, the best things to own are going to be, you know, more unique and risk on assets. Bitcoin was up like 160% last year. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming, but I think that the spot ETFs are going to be really big. There's a lot of unique opportunity there now, you know, for a lot of people that didn't have access or just didn't really want to buy Bitcoin directly or buy it on Coinbase. I think that it's really good for the crypto space. So yeah, I think that Bitcoin can have a pretty solid year.
I agree. And I think, going into the crypto space, I'm looking at crypto this year kind of the same way I'm looking at semiconductors and AI names, in that the winners continue to win, especially if you look at semiconductors and crypto names. The winners continue to capture more market share of the semiconductor space, whereas the losers continue to dwindle and really not move off of where they're trading at. And so I'm kind of looking at crypto the same way. I think with the spot ETF approval, that obviously was a sell the news event. And we probably see a decent pullback here based off of the chart. But going into the rest of the year, I think the spot ETF opens up a lot of opportunity, one, for boomers and people that wanted to be invested in cryptocurrency, but didn't really have the technological savvy to maybe make a crypto wallet and do all those things. They just want to call up their broker and say, buy me some Bitcoin. Before, that wasn't possible. Now you can obviously do that through an ETF. And on top of that, you have 401ks and IRAs and tax savings accounts that are probably going to be getting a lot of Bitcoin exposure into there as well. So I think if we see a little bit of a pullback into Q1 here, I still like Bitcoin and Ethereum for the rest of the year. But in terms of the crypto space as a whole, kind of looking at it the same way I'm looking at the rest, I think it's kind of be selective, and you're not going to see Shiba Inu coin and Doge and all these other shit coins kind of ripping the roof off.
Yeah, but you are going to see, what's it called? I don't even remember the name. Solana or something?
Solana is killing it.
Dude, ripping. Literally ripping. Now, something really important that you mentioned, those tax-exempt accounts. I think that's the biggest benefit that I found. I think if you're young and have a solid investment horizon, there's no reason, and if you can still contribute to your Roth IRA, there's no reason to not be buying at least a little bit of these spot ETFs in an IRA. I mean, whatever. Why not, right? Anything else that you guys want to touch on before we wrap up?
Nah, that was an awesome start to the year podcast, and I'm excited to see what we have for the next 12 months here.
Definitely. All right, so lots to come, lots that we covered. It was fun to talk about last year. Definitely a crazy year in the markets and in the economy, and just how things were able to turn around. And consensus view, as we talked about, and we'll have to remember this as the year progresses, last year to start the year was that things were going to get ugly and that we were likely going to head into a recession. Now, it seems to be the opposite. So at the World Economic Forum, every single economist on planet Earth in Davos is saying that, okay, we're going to be okay. And we're close to this soft landing. So let's just remember that. I'm not saying anything. You know, I'm inherently bullish, as you guys know, and I like for things to be good. But let's keep in mind what the consensus is, and we'll have to wait and see how things end up playing out this year. There's going to be a lot of fun things to talk about and a lot of awesome events coming up, especially leading into, as you mentioned, an election year. But we appreciate you guys listening. Noah, this was an awesome episode. I'll see you next week for episode 96.
Yep. Awesome episode. Take care, guys. See you guys next week.
Our content is intended to be used and must be used for informational purposes only. It is very important to do your own analysis before making any investment based on your own personal circumstances. You should take independent financial advice from a professional in connection with, or independently research and verify, any information that you find in our podcast and wish to rely upon, whether for the purpose of making an investment decision or otherwise.